Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. Thank you so much for joining us. I love coming this way every Sunday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. and Monday morning at 1 a.m. And we also stream live at richarddugan.com, archiving the programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page. I cannot tell you how delightful, how excited I get when I get a chance to do these interviews and how, well, I won't exactly say depressed, but how I wish that I was doing them more often. I don't do them often enough, and I love coming this way, sharing the guests and the conversation and the ideas that are bringing about these new paradigms for a new world. And just very excited about it, and I'm glad that you're joining us. I would also love to hear from you. If you'd like to drop us an email, I'd love to hear from you. The email address is richard@richarddugan.com. That's richard@richarddugan.com. Or you can go tmys@richarddugan.com. TMYS for Tell Me Your Story. TMYS@richarddugan.com. I want to share with you something before we go to our guest. It was a very unusual situation. My wife and I were driving, and we came upon this Y that converged into a single couple of lanes, and I'm pulling off the freeway, and I'm turning, veering left as the road goes, getting ready to pull into traffic, and I thought I was next in line, and this woman in an SUV pulls right in front of me, and I'm, okay, fine, you know. I didn't really get that upset with her, just thinking, okay, she's oblivious to me. She's not even aware that I'm here. And so anyway, we move down the road, we get to our destination, we get out, we get into the store, and this woman, who I'd never seen before, at least I didn't think I'd had, comes up to me and she says, I just needed to talk to you for just a moment, and I don't know who she is or what she's going to say. And she says, I just want to apologize for cutting you off, for getting in front of you. I didn't even see you there until the very last second. And of course I'm flabbergasted that this woman followed me to the store. I was hoping she was shopping there too. It looked like she might be. And, she's apologizing to me. And I just, after the incident was over, I didn't even think anything of it. We went into the store and we're doing our thing, and I didn't mumble about it. Oh, that woman and da, 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 da. And I said, well, I really appreciate the fact that you've come to apologize. Thank you. I'm just, you know, nobody was hurt. Everything's good. And so, you know, there's no problem. And again, she apologized once again. And I said, thank you. And then she went on her way. Most extraordinary experience I've ever had. I've never had anybody do that. And of course, I hope I never have to do that, because I hope I don't ever cut somebody off or do something of that nature. But wow, if more of us would take the time to stay more observant and aware of what we're doing, whether it's driving or otherwise, being more considerate of one another. But then again, if you do something like that and you're able to extend an apology, extend a sense of, I'm sorry, then if you can, I would go for it, because it's going to help the lives of yourself and others to move forward, to expand your awareness and even your consciousness, to move into those new paradigms, those new ways of living. That is a new way of living, let me tell you. Well, today's program is going to help us with that a little bit, Ayurvedic lifestyle wisdom. It's a complete prescription to open your health, prevent disease, and live with vitality and joy. And we have on the phones a woman who I'm very excited to have the opportunity to talk with. And Acharya Shunya is my guest, and I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program. It's a pleasure to have you here.
My pleasure to join you, Richard.
Shunya, you have put this together, and first of all, I have to say that I have been for many, many years, and maybe it's due to my metaphysical primer that I started out at the age of 17 reading, Autobiography of a Yogi, being introduced to the ways of India and the different philosophies that are there and just these kinds of things. Somehow I always seem to be drawn back. Not that I have tried pushing away per se, but it's like, okay, I'll go off and I'll do all these other interviews on these other things. And all of a sudden, boom, this comes up, and the storyline is similar, and you are actually from India.
That is right. I moved here about 2 decades ago, but I've lived bulk of my life in India.
And you are focusing on something that I know a lot of people have heard of, but they aren't that familiar with, because there are so many different aspects to Ayurveda. But in this case, it's Ayurveda lifestyle wisdom. And you're sharing, I guess, that's the subtitle is awfully long in one sense, you know, but very descriptive.
I can't remember it myself.
And there's no appropriate acronym to fill in the gaps there. But lifestyle wisdom, I know that down through generations, especially in this country, you always would go to the old folks, you know, to talk to them about, you know, how to solve this problem or that. I mean, I always looked to my parents in particular, even during my first marriage when we were having problems. I thought, well, shoot, they've been through all of this stuff. I should talk with them. Maybe they can, you know, they may or may not be able to help, but, you know, it can't hurt to ask. A lot of people thought that was a little strange. Why would you go to your parents to get marriage advice? Well, let's see. They've been married 60 plus years. It sounds like a good a good track record. But in terms of lifestyle, what kind of lifestyle are we describing here?
You know, I'm glad you brought up the concept of elders and how they can inform incumbent generation and the youth, and, you know, how to lead our lives. Well, Ayurveda, which is a science and an art of health and healing from ancient India, but it's still relevant today, seems to have emanated forth from collective ancestors of humanity. And they were these sages or seer-like beings who gave us great knowledge. And this knowledge was not something they cooked up, but they observed nature, Richard, for thousands of years. And they observed how Earth has this chronobiological intelligent interweaving with the phenomena of the sun and the moon and the galaxy, if I may say so, and the elements of, you know, fire and wind and earth, and all of this creates a beautiful poetry, but that poetry is not random. And, you know, that fabric or that texture of our intelligent universe is held together by laws of existence, laws of inertia, laws of rest, laws of motion, when to move, when to sleep, when to eat, when to not eat and fast, when to let go, when to accumulate. And all of this is somehow intuitively followed by the sunflower growing in my garden, or, you know, the cuckoo that is, you know, singing in the tree, or the sparrow that's, you know, sitting on my window. But humans seem to forget it, because we create, due to the gift of our minds, a parallel universe, and a universe where we not only gift ourselves technology and comfort and a schedule that we can make up, but then we also, you know, unconsciously fall asleep in it, and we seem to work in alienation with nature. So we have to trek back to these ancestors and go back and connect to this ancient wisdom. And when we do that, and we begin to live as for a very prescriptive, beautiful art of lifestyle, which tells us what to eat, what season is right for what, when to sleep, how to eliminate, what are the rules of sex that all living beings follow and we forgot, what is the exercise, when is too much, when is not, all these little things, health seems to awaken within us. So it's not even about fighting disease. It's about awakening health. And I'll just close, because this became really long, but I just want to say that apparently I'm not the only one, because I am not only a founder of a school of Ayurveda, which has been functioning for 10 years in Northern California, but I'm also the president of a California-wide association, which oversees the work of multiple professionals at schools. And I'm also an important part of a consortium of 60 countries that are participating in Ayurveda. I recently returned from a symposium held in India, where there were delegates from, there were 15,000 delegates from multiple countries, from New Zealand to Tasmania to Australia to wherever, So it looks like something that ancient is still alive because it keeps it simple. It's almost like how you keep returning to, you know, the main book by Paramahansa Yogananda and, you know, and going back to that again and again because it's the truth.
Well, the other thing, too, that I find interesting, and my wife and I actually have discussed this, and that has to do with this aspect of being, well, in our vernacular here in this country, it's referred to as a mentor. You know, being there for someone, it could be older, could be younger, but someone who is in need of a step up, if you will. I love the analogy of the fact that we're all climbing this ladder. And there's someone above me and there's someone below me. And my responsibility is to the person below me to reach down a hand and help them up. Even if that means that they end up ahead of me, which is just fine because this isn't a race. There's an interesting phrase or word that is used. And I use the phrase or the word very, very respectfully. It's almost something that, gee, if I was a woman, I'd want to be this. And that is what's referred to as the old crone. The woman who has that wisdom. The woman you could go to somewhere, like, for example, the stereotypical would be out in the middle of a deep, dark, dank forest where the mist is. And you go to this house and you knock on the door and this old woman opens the door and says, how may I help you? And you come in and whatever the problem is, she will have an answer for you. May not be the answer you like, but she has one for you to help you along. And it sounds to me like, as far as the imagery of the old crone, you're anything but it sounds to me like that's sort of the role that you are sort of sharing with the rest of us through this book, Ayurveda Life Wisdom, that you are, in essence, wanting to help us, metaphorically speaking, who are on a rung or two below you, and you're reaching down your hand and saying, hey, this way, come on up.
I think you really nailed it, Richard. And I do, as you see from the stories of myself being led along by my teacher, Baba, my guru, my paternal grandfather, who was beloved to so many, but then he became my personal mentor. I mean, he had many grandchildren. But I saw that he had a hand held out for my soul, for my body, my mind, and I'm holding him on the other end. So I've never had it put this way, but I really like it, like a ladder. And I have students who are really going forward. You know, I mean, they're teaching at Stanford, they're teaching at prisons all over California, and they're like, you know, they're moving way ahead and beyond, but it just gives me deep pleasure because I know that they are carrying that inherent wisdom for humanity and that we're all doing our part, really. So this book is very much an aspect of service, really, for me. You know, there are various reasons people write books, but I wanted to write a book, and I'm so relieved after writing it because this message has been transforming lives and health and, you know, and changing minds and consciousness in my, you know, 3 decades of work with people. And I wanted to put in a book that would outlive me because, you know, I'm going to be 50 next year and I sat with this immense, you know, aspect and accept my mortality. And there's so many people who depend on me, my one word, my one healing, my one suggestion. So I wanted to just put it all out there in a book so that anybody, anywhere could, you know, read this book, connect to the ancient wisdom in a really authentic way, no dumbing down or deluding for the rest of the world, and yet in an accessible manner with lists and bullets and tables and ingredients that are available, you know, in America, in their gardens or kitchens or maximum by going online. So it's a big relief, and I like being on this ladder. Thank you for putting it that way.
A treasury of lifestyle teachings and wellness practices for every part of your day. And first of all, did you say 50 or 60?
I'm going to be 50.
50, okay.
Next month.
Okay. It's interesting how I've looked in the mirror at myself over the last few decades, and as I've aged, and I will be 57 this year, that sometimes I don't recognize, and it has nothing to do with dementia, folks. Sometimes I don't recognize that person looking back at me. Like, that person looking back at me looks different than how I feel inside.
Right.
And I feel younger. I wish that my body would do the things that I could do when I was 17. Don't we all? Even nominally. But also, I don't know whether this was a disservice to me or not. It's kind of when I look back on this. But there was, I've always been curious about things, and I've always asked questions. And I remember conducting an interview, and after the interview was over, and this was like back in 1980, early 80s, maybe 70, 80, 81. And the comment was made to me, you are, and I was 21. That was right. That's right. I was 21 at the time. And they said to me, you're wise beyond your years. Now, I took that at first as a compliment. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. But as I dwelled on it, I thought, I'm not sure that's a good thing, because I'm going to have to figure out how to keep pace so that as I get older, my wisdom stays ahead of my age. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And I don't know that I'm necessarily, you know, wiser. I'm still very curious. And I'm curious from the standpoint of what you've shared in these stories. Now, you're as you say, your guru is your grandfather. I wish that I had known either of my grandfathers better. I was probably closer to my grandmother, so she probably would have been close to that. Of course, she passed when I was in my teens, I believe, if I'm remembering correctly. But that's one of the things that I have to say, I've had a number of these types of teachers in my life. I know that there are folks out there who, as they travel their path and they find the philosophy that fits them, and then there may be a personage, if you will. And as much as I enjoy reading and rehearing the stories of Paramahansa and then reading other things and meeting other people who knew him or knew people who knew him and on and on and on, he never became for me that focal point any more than when I was a Catholic, a practicing Catholic, that there was any particular saint or priest, or even Mary or Jesus, never became a real focal point, which is sacrilege to some, I'm sure. But I never found that one personage to follow, to pattern my life after, et cetera, et cetera. And there were times when I used to think, am I missing out on something? But that's one of the reasons why we do this show. One of the reasons is because we put out a smorgasbord, okay? And we ask people to come and take what, as I like to say, resonates with them and leave what doesn't. If it doesn't work for you, don't use it. I mean, my gosh, I don't want you to especially if it's literally eating something, to partake of something that tastes terrible to you. That's no fun. But I'm curious, Shunya, how did you decide, because this is not a huge volume here, okay? And yet, you could have filled this thing. This could have been a set of encyclopedias. You know, there are so many stories out there in terms of learning lessons. What was your process in terms of determining what was going to go into this work, in terms of what was going to help people the most? You know, this story versus that story. How did you come to grips with that?
You know, I like to defer to karma, and I didn't choose to, but I was born in a family in India, in a tiny holy city known as Ayodhya, where near a riverbank. And apparently, as I was growing up, I was just a regular kid climbing trees and, you know, having fun with my pet cow and animals and dogs. And then I realized that my family has been imparting this ancient wisdom, but it's not religious. It's a wisdom that awakens people to their own true self. And then we are told that when you meditate on themselves, you will realize that it's common to all beings. And even the grass that is growing under our feet, the eyes of various animals, insects, and other human beings, of course, it's really all conveying the one divine expression. And that it was now a matter of purifying and diffusing our ego-based reality to awaken to a deeper, bigger, grander scheme of things, and that there would be great joy. And as karma would have it, I was this fully ego-wrapped, quite a dense, you know, soul to come into my family. And I went through periods of resistance, inertia, darkness, anger, growing up. And then I also manifested a health condition where I couldn't walk. And I was 18 or 19, and I had pain in my entire body. And because I had to be talking to you today about this, my story took interesting leaps, because then I decided that I didn't want to follow Ayurveda lifestyle wisdom. I wanted to create my own wisdom from my own box. And mostly it was denial and resistance. I didn't want to, you know, be in rhythm with nature or eat healthy food. And I also asked, I insisted, that I want to go to the big hospital and get painkillers and just forget that I have a condition and lead a life of song and dance that, you know, was in defiance to whatever was my reality. Nothing helped. The painkillers gave me, you know, more inflammation in my stomach and diarrhea. And then my grandfather never, ever pushed anything on me. And thousands of people thronged around him. And then one day when I was crying in bed, Richard, he sat by me and said, sometimes the forgetting of the way is necessary to really know our path. Maybe you'd just like to explore something with me and see if it works. And then, you know, one recipe at a time, one application of oil at a time to my inflamed body and joints, one mantra at a time, he told me that health lives inside me. It's my true nature. And I just have to reconnect with it. And the body is, and the diseases are really just symptoms crying out for me and my love and my tender care of my own being. He helped me hug my own self. And so I regained my health. And there was a time I couldn't walk. I can run now. My consciousness is young as ever, as you mentioned, and growing deeply useful. I feel aligned with the universe. So then gradually this knowledge, this wisdom, I realized it was not a small wisdom. There was no pressure on me. And so when I say my guru, I think he is my role model. He's teaching me how to lead a really royal life on earth and to know that I have a body and mind, but I am spirit. And the body and mind and all of this is really a dream, but how can I have such a beautiful time in this dream while I discover the truth within me? So in my case, Richard, if the listeners are listening, and the Baba stories that come through this book are really about an elder showing the way to a younger person. And that's why writing this book, because I wrote this book because this wisdom saved my life.
I think that the stories that are shared by yourself in this work, which is I love the cover too. It's very, very beautiful. Ayurveda Lifestyle Wisdom. Shunya, I'm wondering about your grandfather. I mean, obviously, huge, huge, enormous influence on you and on your life, obviously, and on this work as well. What would you say are some of the more, well, I suppose we could say meaningful or profound lessons that he taught you? And actually, I'll take that one step further. Maybe not so much that he taught you, but that you learned through the things he shared with you. I mean, because obviously the only way we learn sometimes, they say, is, you know, don't learn from, or some people will say, learn from my mistakes. Well, I can't learn from your mistakes per se. I have to make my own before they become really real. So I'm just wondering about that contrast. and some of the more profound lessons that you have learned over the years.
Yeah, that's a very great question, because it's really what we learn from a body of knowledge or teaching that becomes our own. And I think the profoundest lesson that I learned was that how I lead my day is going to determine my life, like the importance of every day, every moment, and that I no longer choose to be unconscious through it, Richard.
Mm-hmm.
I really get up in the morning, and until I go to bed, I really follow the system. I don't just talk about it or write about it.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me, and then I recognized it afterwards, that, and it may sound like I'm repeating myself, but he said it simply, health is your birthright. It's your true nature. And so just instead of focusing on distress in your mind or disease or the gossip of the world and complaining and, you know, nagging or being negative, why don't you cook yourself a healthy recipe with these foods? Why don't you make a bath and put some marigold petals in it and sit in it? So he really taught me how to live in such a way that was in alignment with nature, that seemed to uphold my spirit. And when I tried it for myself, so when instead of going down the rabbit hole, or if I had inflammation, instead of running and feeling like, oh no, damn the genetic condition that I have, or, you know, why am I the unhappy one? I, you know, pick some warm sesame oil and, you know, apply it on my body, sit in a hot tub bath, throw in a couple of, you know, botanicals from my garden, and 30 minutes later, my inherent, you know, health and sense of well-being is back, and I can go back to the world to serve it and to recognize myself more and more. So these lessons around my true nature of being, I don't take disease so seriously, nor do I take emotional distress very seriously, because I have learned that, you know, that's not a complete experience. That's a transitory experience, and there is something bigger and more sustaining, which is myself, that I can bring to it. So I wonder if that makes any sense, but that's just how I go through life. You know, it's a little lighter. I'm treading lighter.
Yeah. Well, in the United States in particular, and obviously you have been here for this, we have gone through a very emotional period of time, a lot of emotional distress over the last 2.5 years from a political standpoint. That some folks are still going through. I mean, you know, it probably will never go away. And yet I have to wonder what your perception is, not of what happened, okay, because I'm not looking to get into specifics, but your perception on how best we can, I'm not sure if the word is get over, or get through, or let go of this emotional distress, to live our lives, to be as you talk about in the subtitle, to be vital, and as I like to use the phrase, to thrive, because right now a lot of folks, they're so wound up over so many things. And I have to say, to be honest with you, my hand goes up. I'm as guilty as anybody else at times, but I've fortunately been able to start reading the headlines and chuckle, you know, for the first time in quite some time, because I thought once this whole process was over back in November, oh, we can all breathe, we can take a relax and just take it easy, and that didn't happen. And so folks are kind of worn out. But in a manner of speaking, the process didn't wear them out. The individuals didn't wear them out. They wore themselves out because of their perception. So how can you help us to get back into our lives and be conscious in our lives so that we can thrive instead of being emotionally distressed?
Each one of us has the responsibility to take care of our inner being. And all the events that are happening outside, the crisscross of dark and light. I mean, some people, they even get depressed if it rains too much or if it's too hot and too cold. So we can take the external and really like juice up the victim feeling inside us. And I'm not denying that the events are difficult outside. But as somebody said, these are not my words, but somebody said, I was talking to a friend and he said, it's a two-step dance. So I'd like to quote that no matter what's happening outside, we too have to align our own rhythm. And, you know, it's so important right now that when going gets difficult outside and we know that we will have to be alert and we might have to deal with change or uncertainty, then the scientific thing to do is to be really restful and have not only vulnerable, but enlightened vulnerability. That's my favorite term. I'm writing a book on it. So the vulnerability is our human self, which would like, you know, mommy and daddy to have it all right, for our political leaders to have it perfect and laid out for us. But we're not children anymore, and we have to deal that Earth has dealt with many such things and always triumphed, and that somehow this is a time for us to meditate, contemplate, take a bigger picture, eat well, eat, cook organic food, grow food in our own homes, you know, preserve seeds, and do all the right things so that our beautiful vibration is strong, so that when we have to be combative, when we have to choose the war and win it, then we win it. And we have to really choose our wars and battles. We can't just be battling it every minute, because then we're so defeated and so depleted and we are so full of victimhood that, you know, we might not even be able to drive our car properly. forget bringing our great nation back to, you know, a strength and harmony and, you know, what is worthy of preserving and role modeling from our, you know, nation's ancestors. So I think just like you begin to chuckle, I've been, you know, talking about this exact theme for a long time, because I have many students who reach out to me and people, and I just feel that probably those of the people who are listening to your show or who follow what I have to say, we went through that jolt, but we're all coming out and we're all taking personal responsibility for what happens in our collective. And that responsibility begins with returning to our happy, healthy lifestyle. And that's all I'd like to say at this point, Richard.
No, that's fine. Shuni is my guest, and she is the author of Ayurvedic Lifestyle Wisdom. We're talking with her about a lot of different things. We're going to continue our conversation here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Please, I encourage you to stay with us and also check out, we'll give out the website when we get back.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we are talking with Shunya. She's the author of the, I think it's a great work that you have made available for all of us, and it sounds to me like it's not the end. There's more coming in many different forms. Ayurveda, Lifestyle Wisdom is the title of the book, and we encourage you to pick up a copy. What would be the best website for folks to go to in order to get more information, maybe even get in contact with you to get some assistance in that regard?
Well, the website is really my name, acharyashunya.com, and I believe that, Richard, you will be posting some information or my name will be spelled out on,
mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
You know, where you post the show.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, pretty much the book is available at every major bookseller or even Whole Foods and Pharmaca, and, you know, just about, you can look it up if you just type in Ayurveda, AYURVEDA, Lifestyle Wisdom, you will be led to the book. So hopefully people would be able to connect with me through the book.
Right. Acharya Shunya is the website, and it's a .com, right?
Yes, that's
okay.
.com.
And that's Acharya Shunya. And we'll have a link on our website to the website, as well as a link to the audio of this interview. And you'll be able to go there and listen to it. And we encourage you to do so, as well as check out many of our other guests as well. In terms of the process that we are all going through in this world. And there are so many. I've gotten to the point now, Shunya, that I use the word philosophy instead of religion, because in essence, because really that's what they are. They're different ways of seeing things and making sense of life, and our existence. And from a philosophical standpoint, you could you know, people mix and match. I mean, you know, there's nothing wrong with that, because I learned long ago, and I'm sure you probably did too. If there are so many different tastes out there that we can partake in, so many different drinks and so many different educational directions and so many different other aspects of our lives, I found it inconsistent and illogical from my perspective to think that there was only one way to God or to the universal power or whatever you want to refer to it. And when I watch, for example, when I watch Cooks in the Kitchen on some of these wonderful programs, and they start mixing the different ingredients that I've never heard of before in my life, but it sure sounds good. I think, wow, this is incredible. That to me is the epitome of education, when you bring into your world such a diversity of thought, if you will, and even conversation for that matter, but of thought, from so many different perspectives. And it's not about starting your own religion per se. It's about finding your place, if you will, in the universe. And I'm curious as to how you have addressed that particular question or concept of finding your place in the universe.
Yeah, I mean, I think my whole life, I think that question is, I mean, bless you for asking that question, but I get, because I think it represents a quest, and it represents my entire journey. And once again, I'm really fortunate to be part of a system of spiritual thought, Vedanta, or from the Vedas, which does not assert that God is of any one form. But in fact, it was the original teaching thousands of years ago that said that how can we box God in one form and one name, but that God, if it is God, or if it is really consciousness that is formless and inexhaustible and infinite and nameless, and then we each have, you know, a choice if we want to see that God in nature or sunrise or an idol, but really it's formless. So when that became, I'm a free soul. I was born in India. I'm born in a traditional family. I'm married. I lead a conventional life, but I'm authentically unconventional, and I really am a sovereign being. And when I've said yes to anything, including Ayurveda or God in my life, I have said it from a place of deep, deep conviction. And from childhood, I could never be really, you know, asked to conform to anything. So I'm very fortunate, first of all, Richard, and I gave thank karma for it, that I was born to a spiritual family that really upheld, you know, a spirituality and philosophy and a contemplative life more than a box, you know, story-based religious life. And, you know, and we don't condemn religion, because once again, we recognize that for some people, that is the doorway to whatever they are seeking, you know, within, which is the pure consciousness. And then I personally, you know, looked at Ayurveda, and I saw that it was not made for one kind of people who look a certain way, have a certain skin color, or, you know, and they practice on that side of the mountain. It, you know, it really stands in Sanskrit right there in the big thing, that this is for all beings and all creatures. And they even have chapters and books for Ayurveda for elephants and horses and plants and trees, because Ayurveda deals with the cosmic matter and, you know, cosmic consciousness, and not with individualized, regionalized, culturalized language. And that is why when I teach in America, because I really, you know, I've lived more decades in America now, you know, and I will continue living here. I created a book where I could just research the flora and the botanical tradition of America, and I could just, you know, create an Ayurveda that is as authentic as somebody would practice in India, but it's completely relevant for our people here and now. And so whether you are eating Italian food or Japanese food or Indian food, whether you are mixing up with salad, you can still follow some rules which are universal. And the same rules are followed by other animals too. So I guess in a way, I'm very fortunate. And I feel like a thought peer with you, where I guess I'm a good ambassador for it, because Ayurveda wants me to be universal, and that's what I bring forward. But we connect to our biological, psychological, spiritual inheritance through this lifestyle. Am I being able to communicate in a short time what you're asking?
I know. Sometimes I tend to ask questions that could take a week to answer, but that's fine because we have lots of time here. That's one of the beautiful things about this program that is available on the internet, is that if the interview runs longer than the actual radio broadcast, hey, it's all there on the website. It's all there. You just have to go to the radio show's page, click on the play button associated with the program, the interview, this one in particular, on Ayurveda Lifestyle Wisdom, and you can hear the whole interview from beginning to end, if there's anything that was said. And that's why I never worry too much about if you want to tell the story that takes 15 minutes, please tell the story, because it's important. It's one of those things that I found, one of the I guess pieces of wisdom that I've learned, is that there is never any wasted time. That whatever you do, it is going to help you and facilitate you somewhere. You don't know exactly where down the road, but it will. Even if nothing more than it helps to develop a greater sense maybe of patience, of slowing down, those kinds of things, as opposed to, well, I don't know how knowing this particular language or this particular kind of math is really, like, you know, you hear, I'm sure you heard this in school, even in India. Well, why do I need to learn this? How is this relevant to living life, you know? I mean, honestly, I never learned calculus or trigonometry. I had a smattering of geometry, and that was about it. And those kinds of questions would come from a lot of people who didn't want to take the class. But again, it provides you with information that, gee, if you wanted to go into a direction that would utilize that discipline, guess what? You have a head start. But I still believe that there's no wasted time in that regard. And that everything that we do is important. Do you think that that's part of something that's sort of lost, especially here in the West, that people, some people, not all, but some people, they're observed as wasting time in terms of the lifestyle that they've chosen? Maybe they're looked upon as lazy.
I don't think it's a Western phenomena per se. I think it's a universal phenomena that there are some people who are in resistance to any change and any information, old or new, and they just want to, you know, lead the life they want to, and then they learn from their own experiences, and or at least they hope to learn, and there's, you know, slow and steady change or radical change in some people after disease strikes, and, you know, I've seen people like that. I mean, we have charitable clinics, you know, all along California, and we meet people with, like, you know, the deepest of conditions, and they're, like, pretty regretful that they didn't, you know, exercise or change anything or didn't listen to their envy in time. And then they come to us, and then we give them little gems of wisdom that I've put in the book, and they're so grateful. So you never know when people become receptive to knowledge. But there is a class of people, which is my leadership, which wants to proactively, without pain, you know, they either want to find new solutions, which are natural, which are spirit-infused, mm-hmm. which are, you know, different, and which have been tried and tested. They are not embarrassing recalls in Ayurveda. Ayurveda in the last 5,000 years has not had to say, oops, we have a principle wrong, so we're going to go back and change our theory or go back to the whiteboard. You know, it's been tried and tested. It's popular worldwide. It has a growing, subscribership. And it's economical and ecological. You can use your own kitchen and garden and, you know, your own choices to, you know, make a difference. So there are those people who proactively choose it, and they benefit from it. And the best part is that Ayurveda is defined as the knowledge of life, so it's not a knowledge of disease. So many people, they get attracted to Ayurveda, or they hear about it, or they hear my voice in your interview, and they might wonder, you know, where is this woman's conviction coming from? And so they kind of inadvertently walk into Ayurveda, and then they find that, wow, they were so glad that they found a body of knowledge that looks at them in its completion. Ayurveda says that the human being is not just matter, but also mind, also senses, and consciousness. So we don't have to be apologetic for all dimensions of our existence. So people feel grateful. And, you know, in my work here in America, I live here, I work here. I mean, I have worked with just about every nationality, and I have, in fact, Indians are less aware of, less, they take their heritage for granted, and sometimes they would say, oh, I know all about Ayurveda, my grandmother told me, but they might just be knowing like 1%. And then I have students and clients from different parts of the world that are reading the book, they are keeping a journal, they are making changes in their lifestyle and becoming huge ambassadors for it. So I find resistance, but I find it universal. And I also find a lot of people worldwide moving towards ancient natural knowledge and trying to make it part of their own.
And I have to say that's one of the things that I found so intriguing, not only about information coming from India in particular and that part of the world, but also even further east of that from China. And I always found, I've always found it fascinating when you're talking about, for example, Chinese medicine. They didn't have an FDA 5,000 years ago. They just knew that it worked. And that's the one thing that has intrigued me more than anything else, is the whole aspect of our connectedness, our intuition, that aspect of our spiritualness, if you will, if we would just start to trust that, man, we would be so much further along. But by the same token, this is where we are. You know, you can't force it. We can't force ourselves to be where we're not. But at the same time, you know, I sit here thinking, my gosh, humanity's been around for thousands and thousands of years. How is it we haven't progressed beyond this stuff that's still going on? And I guess the better question to you is, how do we help our society, our civilization, to progress beyond the mortal material minutia?
I think by doing exactly what we're doing, you have this radio show, and I have a school, and I've now written a book, and I write more. I think I sincerely show up. I'm present to my own. I'm present to my own responsibility and accountability to myself, and in integrity and sincerity, I show up and I spread the word and I live the word. My own life. Most of my students see me as a living role model, and they've lived close to me. I've had students for decades, and they see me and how I deal with challenges. Mental, physical, biological, social, financial, and how I use wisdom to be a better being and to connect with the higher within me. And then they become lit up and awakened in their own families and community. So I guess one person at a time was spreading the word. And, you know, I didn't want to you know, one can feel lazy hosting a show year after year. You've been doing it for a couple of decades yourself, I read.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard some of your wonderful shows. And I've been doing this day after day after day. And we can have laziness, too. I mean, hey, we're human beings, too. And we can have resistances. But then one of the biggest ways I know that I'm serving society and a larger, myself in the larger collective, is by being really honest and saying, look, it was a rainy day. I felt like curling up and not waking up on time, or not, you know, drinking the tea I should be drinking, or not cooking the food. But then I did it anyway. Mm. So there is an honest, fearing innocence and honesty in my humanhood. But that's not going to prevent me from touching my own, you know, infinite godhood, if I may say that word.
Yes.
And I just do it every day, and I believe I'm making a difference, you know, at least I'm having a blast.
Well,
I can say that for sure.
And I am too. And I have to say that I took my wife and I took a vacation for the first time in 10 years back in December, and we took a drive, and we made sure that there was no rush to get anywhere. And
yeah.
I, even as I share this with you, images are flashing through my mind. And I have to say that I was probably more conscious during that week. And part of it had to do with a lot of the preparation that went on ahead of time, and also the intent of just having a nice, relaxed, and enjoyable vacation, getting away, and yeah, being lazy. I mean, there were periods of time when we stayed in our bed and breakfast in our room, and we just had the TV on low and just laid there in bed and just laid there.
Yeah.
And it was wonderful. And we need to do that, too, because our bodies need to have that time to recharge, not just sleeping at night. But there are times. I mean, that's why I think the Europeans in particular in France, as I've heard, have a great system where I think it's something like you get 3 weeks. I think it's 3 weeks of vacation a year. And I think you have to take it all at once. Meaning they want you to take your vacation and relax and rejuvenate. Maybe it's more often than that. All I know is that even though the tradition here in the United States is you get 2 weeks every year, a lot of folks don't take it because they think that their job is dependent upon them being there. It's like, well, wait a minute. Well, then why were you offered a two-week vacation and now you think you can't take it? And I have to tell you, I was there. And finally...
Well, I guess that is why in Ayurveda's lifestyle prescription, there are great oodles and places during the day of doing nothing or just being quiet or, you know,
yeah,
just sitting down in your backyard, yeah, or your terrace. And it's like part of a lifestyle where your body and mind are just sitting. You know, have you seen squirrels and birds and monkeys just sit? It's a certain game that the world go by.
Yeah.
And that's how we need to do. And that's what you did when you took a vacation, you and your wife. And that's what I do. And yesterday, somebody was talking about me in great glowing terms and said, and she's so busy and she's so hard to get hold of. And so I'm so fortunate to be meeting her. And, you know, and such kind words, you know, they were genuine from her soul. But I later told her, I said, you know, you perceive me as busy, but I've been relaxing a lot, and that just gets shown to you as my busy time.
Yeah, yeah.
But I take time for me, and Ayurveda gives us that permission. So I'm glad we're touching that because, the Ayurveda lifestyle wisdom is not just a prescription to get active and to do all the time, but to be, and what? That's equally important.
Well, you touched upon something that's epitomized by I want to say, I think it's a line from the Old Testament Bible, and having to do with, you know, there's a time to sow and a time to reap, and there's a time,
uh-huh,
you know, I mean, there's, if you want to put it into simplest terms, is there is the duality in this world. You know, there's up and down and left and right and forward and back and so on and so forth, and day and night. And we need, you know, you need busy, you need active, but again, you also need passive. You also need down. You need to relax. And I am very grateful for the time that you have shared with us. And before I let you go, I want to, first of all, extend to you the invitation. Should you find yourself intentionally or otherwise lost in Santa Barbara, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation. I think it would be great fun to talk
more
about this and share with our listeners about what you have found and what you want to share with them. And it would be great. So please, if you do find yourself here, please let us get in touch.
I would be honored.
And second of all, I want to remind our listeners that if you want to get more information, you can go to Acharya Shunya. That's Acharya Shun, as in Nancy, YA.com. And you can find out more about the book, the work that she's doing herself and so forth. And we encourage you to do that. And before I let you go, I have three final questions I want to ask you. You may have addressed them in some fashion throughout this interview, but I'd like to ask them pointedly, and then you can answer them in the same manner if you'd like. The first question is, who is Shunya?
Can you ask the question again?
Who is Shunya?
I think I'm just yourself in a different body and a couple of different ego quirks, but really I'm just the same soul in different expression. Shunya also means infinity in an ancient language, Sanskrit. I'm hoping, I'm a human being that, an expression of a human being that keeps trying to uncover something infinite in my daily, mundane transactions. I guess that's Shunya.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
All my life, I wanted to bring hope in people. It was just something hardwired within me. It's hard for me to see the distress of animals or children, older people and beings, and I have been known to be kind inherently and compassionate. But now I have some tools, and through my own life, because it really empowered me and strengthened me to continue with this dreamlike existence with better health, better sense of well-being, I want to just share this message. It's a very humble desire. It worked for me. Here are a couple of tips that work for me. You try to. You don't have to do it all. You don't have to change your religion or change the way you eat or become a vegetarian. You just have to, you know, it's a very rational and accommodating science. Check it out and see if it works for you in your life today. And it might.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
My life purpose is to recognize why I have this life and who am I and what part of me looks like it's real and what part of me is real. And to then come from that real. And when I talk about real, I don't mean the real that comes from India or speaks in Sanskrit or teaches something, but the real that is beyond time, beyond space, and it's beyond differences and separation, but it's universal and common.
Acharya Shunya, thank you so much. I have not only enjoyed our conversation here and what you've shared with us, but also just the opportunity to bring this program to our listeners. And again, I hope that one day we do sit across the table and have this conversation once again.
Thank you for having me as a guest.
Oh, you're very welcome. I just wanted to thank you for taking so much time and look forward to having you in studio in the not-too-distant future.
And I just wanted to say that I've been on different radio shows in the past and, you know, now with the new promotion, but I found you as one of the most spiritually contemplative hosts, so I really enjoyed the deeper questions. I mean, I was actually having a good time. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I am quite humbled by that. That is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Richard Dugan, and until next time, love Talal.